You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, with Maddie Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Really excited to have friend of the program, Brian Christofferson, with us today. We're going to get to Brian in just one moment. Common fans, go check out the Common Fan website if you haven't already, www.commonfan.co. You can see all of our episodes, listen to all of our episodes, sign up for the newsletter, which is free. Check out all of our social media stuff. You can do everything. It's all there. One-stop shop, commonfan.co. Check it out and tell your friends. Also, go to Certified Piedmontese, cpbeef.com. You can get 25% off using the promo code COMMONFAN, all one word, COMMONFAN. They've got the best steaks, ribs, ground beef, pot roast, roast, all the roasts. Everything you can think of, all the beef, beef bacon, beef ribs, everything.
Hanging tender.
Hanging tender. And it's Nebraska beef. What more could you want? It's the best stuff you can find anywhere. Yep. Go to cpbeef.com, use the promo code COMMONFAN, get yourself 25% off, and order all the beef your heart desires. One more thing, guys. I want to give a shout out to my cousin's daughter. I guess that would make her my second cousin. Is that how? I never know how that works.
I think so.
My second cousin, Kendall Zavala. She is a cross-country runner at Norris High School. She's already committed to the Huskers, and she was just named the 2024-2025 Nebraska Girls Cross-Country Gatorade Player of the Year.
Let's go.
Look out. So congratulations, awesome. Kendall. Good for Kendall. From
there you go, Kendall.
Common fans. Guys, I don't know what happened. My brother Andy ran a 4.3 40. My second cousin is clearly a rock star when it comes to cross country. I could barely walk from point A to point B. Yeah. I don't know what happened.
I bet you Kendall could run a 7-minute mile like I did. I bet you they could.
The seven minute mile hasn't been proven, Jeff. That has not been proven.
Maybe, just maybe.
And TJ, you're a heck of a baseball player. Let's not kid around here.
Now that means a lot, Matt. That means a lot. Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right, BC is like, what are these guys talking about? Yeah. How are you, Brian? Nice to have you back.
I'm doing well. I enjoyed the shout out. No problem at all from me.
Oh, appreciate that. Do you guys have rankings on high school cross country runners, or are you not there yet? 247.
We should probably expand and include that. I might need your expertise, though, in who's a 4-star, who's a 3-star, who's on the climb there.
Yeah, Kendall Zavala would be the top, number one in Nebraska and tops, in the country as well, just to be clear.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like Nebraska locked her up, though. That's exactly right. That's good. Yeah, so in-state recruiting is not failing on that front. That is very positive news.
That's exactly right. Brian, if this was a few years ago, we'd probably be talking about how slow things are this time of year. It's late February, signing day is over, spring ball hasn't started yet. But just in the last week or so, Nebraska hired a new general manager, whatever that means. The Huskers canceled their home and home with Tennessee. And, several new assistant coaches talked to the media. When is a guy like BC supposed to get a vacation?
I think there was like a couple weeks there in February that would have worked well. I never complain. I mean, I get to cover sports for a living and sit at my kitchen table most of the time. And then if I feel like I'm frustrated at my kitchen table, I go to a nearby coffee shop, and that's my work day. So, I respect the people who are actually like digging ditches and doing stuff like that. While I'm sitting very comfortably, writing a story about DeKale Short. So, Not a bad deal. So no complaints from me.
Tell me if I'm wrong. It is an indicator probably of just the current landscape of college football for sure. Maybe college athletics in general, of just how it's more sort of nonstop than ever. Is it not?
Yeah. I think it did become like that the last few years. I'm interested if it changes back a little bit here. You're hearing about how, we might go to more of an OTA system, and you wonder like what the future of spring football is and stuff like that. So I do actually wonder if there's a time soon coming where there's going to be more of like a 2 to 3 month break where there's not as much happening, but I'm not sure on that. As we all know, the ground is moving under us with the college landscape and about what the calendar is going to look like every day, even by the hour. So it's almost hard to keep track of. I think it's interesting. Sometimes I do get a lot of fans though, and I think probably a reason your podcast is popular. You guys, I know, focus a lot like on the roster and personnel and stuff like that. And I do think there's still that craving constantly for like talk about the actual personnel and the people within the team, as opposed to like all these out there topics in college sports that are really hard for us to grab and sometimes even understand, like like with rev sharing and how that's all going to work out and stuff like that. So I always love when we get back into the nuts and bolts of like who might be on the two deep on the offensive line and stuff like that. So that's probably where my wheelhouse is.
Yeah. Let's talk
Perfect.
about the staff there, BC. And I'm glad you said Dick Hill's name first, because I honestly didn't even know how to pronounce it. So Dick Hill Shorts, or Phil Snow, or God, there's a lot of Phils. Phil Simpson. Phil's a pretty popular name. Owens, you got a
Yeah.
son named Phil.
I do have a
You got a
Phil.
brother named
Yeah.
Phil. A lot of Phils out there. They all talked to the media recently. Is there anything that jumped out from those media sessions for you as somebody covering it?
Yeah, when Phil Snow was first hired, I thought, okay, that's a big deal. I mean, this is a guy who's been the right-hand man of Matt Rhule for 2 decades, basically, and that he trusts him. But I think even since like December and listening to him speak on Wednesday about like his role of like how he wants to get his hands dirty. He wants to be down there on the field, and he's like, that's part of the reason why I'm here on this job is to like I want to coach defensive linemen with the technique and fundamentals, and then move over the backers and the DBs and stuff like that. So I think anybody who was like under the impression that he was brought in here as just sort of like this figurehead, person, that's gonna do stuff sort of behind the scenes that we who cares? It's not that. Like he's gonna be a central part of this. And I thought he was important when he was hired, like I said, but I think even more so, like when you hear that he's like interviewing the special, for the special teams coordinator, like who they're gonna hire there. Like he was involved in that process, of talking to like Mike Eckler and the guys who are after that job. And you just see the immense amount of trust that Rhule has in him. And I think that's really important at this time to have guys like Phil Snow, like Dana Holgorsen, and these veteran guys who have been in big roles, John Butler, like in all his time in the NFL, where Rhule can trust them to do this thing over here, or that it's looking right or the way you want it to look while you're juggling all these other balls that are in the air that go with being a head coach in the year 2025.
Love it. Well, Brian, I'm usually the defense guy,
Yeah.
but let's kind of switch gears here a little bit. We've got a couple of new, I guess Dana Holgorsen's newer. He's kind of was in an interim role, so to speak, the last season, but now officially the offensive coordinator. Mike Eckler, special teams coordinator, a couple dynamic personalities, those two guys. Huskers have pretty significantly revamped the coaching staff, added some of those guys, top tier assistants. What's more likely, in your opinion, problems with the new staff gelling in time for the season to start, or the new staff makes an immediate impact and Nebraska turns a corner this fall?
I'm bullish on this staff, and I think let's use like Terry Braden as an example as the D line coach. Yes, he's new to Nebraska, but if you go look at how that hire was made, he's part of like the coaching tree of like D line play and like the like what Matt Rhule wants out of that. Like he's in the same tree like that Terrence Knighton came out of and all that. So when I sort of looked at some of the different hires, they all made sense. Like you saw where the branches connect and how, yes, they're gonna have to gel together, and there's that new aspect of them being in Lincoln, but I think they have backgrounds that are very much in line with what Matt Rhule wants in a staff and like how he likes to coach players and the type of scheme and type of fundamentals they're going to use. And so I've written this a couple times this offseason. I feel like every hire, when you look at it, it makes a lot of sense, and you don't have to like squint at it, to be
Right.
figure out like why that was. Like Addison Williams was like Gus Malzahn's like right-hand man as like an associate coach for him, and then he brought him on and was his DC at UCF. And I mean, Gus Malzahn was like, 10 years ago, kind of the it coach, and the fact that he had that sort of trust in Addison Williams speaks a lot to him. And I also think this time and place now where you can send whatever 10 assistant coaches you want on the road recruiting is really working to Matt Rhule's benefit, because you can send like Phil Simpson and Jamar Mosey and Keith Williams out for you, and Phil Snow, who maybe 2 or 3 years ago, well, we heard this from him Wednesday, didn't take the job or what, didn't come on as DC because he's like, maybe I'm not at that age where I don't want to do all that other stuff. Well, now there's the opportunity for him to really focus in on being a mentor and getting on field with guys, and he doesn't have to be part of the recruiting process and all that stuff. And so I think as the rules have shifted, and I'm getting away a little bit from your question, but I like that rule shifting really well with it. I feel like he's adapting well, and the staff he brings in, and how they each have their particular thing they can kind of accentuate.
Love that.
Yeah, love that. Absolutely. And you mentioned recruiting, Brian. Let's get into some recruiting a little bit. And I'm sorry I didn't mention at the top. Hopefully everybody knows you can find all of BC's great work at 247sports.com. The Nebraska affiliate or contingent of 247 Sports does a great job, Brian and Mike Schaefer and Michael Bruns. So get your subscription, common fans. Everybody needs to subscribe to 247
Subscribe,
Sports.
dang
Come on now. It's fantastic.
it.
I know we're kind of early in the 2026 cycle, and so let's look at 2025.
Yeah.
Since that class is in the boat, some of those guys are on campus doing mat drills even at the moment. So who are some high schoolers? Well, one thing I love about this staff is they are not afraid to play guys young. And if they can, it doesn't matter position. If a guy can help us on the field, they're going to help us on the field. Who are some high schoolers with the best chance of seeing the field and making an impact this very 2025 season?
Yeah, really good question. I think
They're obviously,
you.
they won't be in high school by the fall, but high school
No,
recruits.
I got you. I think Cortez Mills is a guy that has a lot of Ja'Cory Barney in him, and obviously we saw what. I mean, they grew up like in the same area, and they're just that doesn't make you the same. Your mentality is always the same way, but I sense they actually are kind of similar, and like. I expect to not waste time making a difference there. I've been a dog all my life. I expect to be a dog in Lincoln. Cortez, I think, has some of that in him when you talk to him, which Ja'Cory did. I still remember interviewing Ja'Cory like the month or two before he arrived, and I was like, this guy is not going to settle for not being on the field right away. Like, you just kind of knew. So I think Cortez Mills has some of that strikes me. And wide receiver is going to be interesting because you've got the new portal additions like Dane Key and Isaiah Hunter and Hardly Gilmore and Ja'Cory, obviously. But I do think there's still space for a freshman to make his mark and to give you like six or seven guys where you feel really good about. Because I do feel like, I don't know if you guys are the same way. Receiver's a position where every offseason, about now, I talk myself into like, man, they got like eight or nine guys.
Yes,
I feel
the
really
Nebraska
good.
football
Like,
disease.
how
We
are they
all
how,
have
yeah, how are they going to get the ball to all these guys? This is awesome. And
it.
then you get to the November, and now this is not picking on Billy Kemp. This is actually a compliment to him. But I remember a couple years ago in his 1 year here, he's like kind of hurt and limping around in November, and I'm like, he's got to be out there because there's only like three
Yeah,
guys that
there's
you
nobody
trust.
else.
Yeah. So it does feel like we work our way from like oh yeah, there's 8 to 10, and oh, how are they gonna even keep them happy too? Are there three? So hopefully when people like hear me say Cortez Mills, they're not like, well, who cares? You got all these other guys. I wanna see this actually happen now in front of us, where there's like 7, 8, and you're like, okay, that's happening. So he'd be one I would name. Dawson Merritt on the defensive side. Rhule said as much on signing day. It was a funny signing day press conference because we talked about almost everything else but recruiting. And so this class, in a way, it's strange. We haven't actually, I feel like, in the media talked as much about them near as much as other recruiting classes in the past. But Dawson Merritt's a guy, I think, as an outside backer, that could factor in. And I think he looks at like someone like Vincent Shavers, last year, and what he got done. And you saw the progression of Willis McGahee, sort of similar, where the question was well stated, like that, this is a coaching staff that has played some young guys. And so I do think there is hope, that they can get on the field quickly. Another guy I'd mention is Malcolm Simpson. I think you might, if people follow him on social media, he's just a freak athlete for a D lineman. And Rhule has even mentioned like it's actually like his basketball, like when you watch him jump and like just how he moves his feet out there on the hardwood, that gets you really excited about how that could translate. I think he was a key guy to hang on to in this class. So the linebackers are really interesting with, I mentioned Merritt, but Christian Jones, and I think Pierce Mooberry is like a sleeper locally that people shouldn't forget about. And Tyson Terry, everybody, of course, heard a lot about him this last week as he finished off an undefeated wrestling career at my alma mater, Omaha North. I better drop that in there. But, he did it on a torn ACL. So he's going to have surgery. So we'll see if that, sort of hinders like his first year and how quickly he can make a difference. But I think over time, Tyson's one of those guys. There's certain guys in a class you're just like, I feel like he's definitely going to give you something. I don't know what level it's going to be, but I know he's going to get on the field at some point and contribute to this program. Tyson Terry's that kind of guy to me.
Yeah.
That
It seems.
ACL thing was, sorry, Matty, I know you got a question, but that ACL thing was unbelievable. Like when I saw that on Twitter, like if my calf is sore, I'm like, yeah, I got to call off the, I'm not working out today. I can't do this. I
I injured
cannot
myself when I
imagine winning.
sleep. I
Yes.
slept
Yeah.
on
I
my
can't
leg wrong.
imagine winning a state title on a torn ACL. That's just incredible.
Yeah, he seems like he could be like Nash 2.0. Is the vibe that I get from him. And I mean, obviously there's the wrestling connection, but well, BC, we talked about the high school guys. On paper anyway, the transfer portal class for Nebraska seems to be pretty good. Looks like they've filled some holes that they might have had, added some depth, and you mentioned a few of the receivers that they brought in. What's your assessment of this transfer portal class?
I think on paper it looks good. I thought the addition late of Rocco Spindler from Notre Dame was huge. And I know we were really lo locked in around here on the tackle spot in particular, and like get that tackle, that big tackle. And obviously they got the big kid from Alabama too. But I think Rocco on the interior allows you flexibility. Like if you can say, okay, we got two of the five, 40% of the line through the portal here, and we feel pretty good about it. That's a big step. I felt like the fact that he just came from a program that made it to the national championship game, and he's a very personable guy, I think, who's going to fit really well in the locker room and be someone that other guys can look up to. So I thought that was a big deal in the process. I think Desaun McCullough on the defensive side is, I did a recent ranking of the portal guys, and I had him number one. And I just think it's because if it works out, he's the type of player who, no matter what type of front they want to use, they can leave him out on the field. And he's bulking up. The challenge he has, and this is real, is that he's never had a home base sort of at a position. Like he's been moved around. Like he's a guy who his first year at Indiana was pretty good, but he's been moved around, like where he's been considered like a DB or a linebacker, or, you know, could he be a rush end type guy? And so I think Nebraska's going to bulk him up a little bit. I think he's going to get some work with Phil Simpson at that outside backer jack spot, and they're going to see what he can do and if he can wear all those hats that they hope he can. But if he does, that is going to check a lot of boxes for this defense, you know, with one guy who can have that type of versatility.
Yeah, he's very intriguing with his build. I mean, he's like, isn't he like 6'4", 6'5"? I mean, just long and athletic. There's a lot. I mean, I could see why he'd been moved around a lot. And he's just got that frame that, you know, and the speed. Is he a DB? Is he a linebacker? Is he a rush end? But yeah, I'm excited about him.
Yeah. And if you want a sleeper, Jalen George from East Tennessee State, sometimes you got to pay attention to when they bring guys in. Like December was such a busy month, it's easy to lose track of it. But he was in on one of the first weekends. So he was high on their board. And he wasn't like a guy, like if you look at even 24/7 Sports or anybody's like portal rankings, they're not going to just gush about, like, oh, Nebraska got this guy. But he's got 2 years to play, and if he can be just a strong guy in your rotation to go with, hopefully growth from Van Poppel, Keona Davis, Elijah Judy's still got to give him some good reps. But if he can fit like right in there and just be solid, that's going to go a long way for Terry Braddon in his first year working with that group. Matt Rhule has always had confidence that they can continually be good on the D line, no matter what question marks those of us on the outside may say are attached to that group. And I do have some, but if Jalen and Deson and Williams-Wanary come along, and you know, maybe not all of them just jump off the page right away, but if like two of those three are really good, we'll be thinking, you know, we can erase some of the questions we have about that unit.
Sure, absolutely.
BC, you kind of jumped into a question I was going to ask you about sleepers. So if you have any other ones, I mean, I'm all ears. And the other thing I was going to talk about too is just specifically since we've lost so much at the defensive line, if there's anybody that's caught your eye in that position as well, that's going to step their game up in 2025.
Yeah, that's a good one about the sleepers. I don't know that Harley Gilmore is considered a sleeper at receiver, but he might have the highest ceiling, I think, of anybody. And if you paid attention to how Kentucky reacted when he left there, and they were pretty disappointed. He arrived at that program when he was 16 years old because he reclassified. And so he just turned 18. I think he's got elite speed. Obviously, Dakile Shorts knows what he can do very well from having coached him and seen him up close. I've heard he's a real workhorse, and he's gained weight since he's been here already. I know that. And I definitely think he is going to be one to watch. And also, the big question is, can Nebraska kind of take the top off defenses, which they really struggled with last year? Like, I remember, like, in the summer, I was all on the Jalen Lloyd train and like, okay, they're going to continue with that. Never really happened like you sort of envisioned. And that's going to be a big part for Dylan and those receivers, is if he can find like those a couple of options who DBs just can't hang with, they can't run with. And maybe Gilmore's that guy. We'll see. I don't want to put it all on him, but they have potential there, and he would be a guy you would cite. And other sleepers you think of are special teams, like Jack McAllister come in from Washington as the punter, Kevin Gallick, the long snapper from New Hampshire. Hopefully we talk about him and stuff like this in the off season, and then we never talk about him in October. Like that position just needs to be rock solid, and hopefully he nails that part, because if you think about it, Nebraska might have lost one or two games because they couldn't snap the football. And that's really tough to take. So hopefully that problem is solved.
We've talked about that many times since the end of the season
Yeah,
about the special
if
teams.
we're talking
Special
about the
teams.
long snapper, it's usually not in a good
That's not a good thing.
context.
Not
Sorry.
great. Not great. Really don't really need to know their name a whole lot.
No.
Well, we've survived January and February, Brian. All of Husker Nation is kind of frothing at the mouth, waiting for spring ball at this point. Do we have a spring ball schedule, by the way? That's not my question, but do we have a spring ball schedule yet?
Kind of. It starts the week of March 24th is the first week.
Okay.
So
Okay.
we're getting close.
Okay.
The
All right.
spring game event, which is not a game, is April 26th.
Okay. So about a month starting in late March.
Yep.
So Husker players currently doing winter conditioning drills. I mentioned earlier mat drills. You wrote about this after Coach Rhule went on Urban Meyer's podcast recently. What the hell is a mat drill?
Yeah, it's a. I thought he gave an answer that was the most revealing since he's been here, because they're always. It's always been talked about, kind of like, oh yeah, mat drills. It's like it reminds me of the Seinfeld where Kramer's like talking about write-offs, and Jerry's like, you don't even know what a write-off is.
But they
You know,
do.
it's
That's why they write it off.
what you do when they write it off. Yeah. It's like that kind. That's kind of what I think of with mat drills. It's like, oh yeah, the mat drill. That's freaking intense, but no one can say exactly what it is.
It is, define it.
It's like Vegas. You were there, but you aren't supposed to say what happened there.
Yeah.
So, I think the biggest part I take away from what he said, which anybody could listen to, it's not like I have inside information on this, but it holds everyone accountable at the same time. Like you're in a group, and if like someone fails, the whole group gets set back for that. So there's an accountability aspect, I think, to it, that stands out the most. You know, whether you're running lines or whatever they're doing, it's everybody's got to hold their part of the rope up. Otherwise, this thing fails, and you see who's sort of made for it and who isn't. And I think one of the revealing things is that Matt Rhule is center in it. Like he runs the mat, you know, so he wants to look in their eyes and see who's got it and who doesn't in those moments. And you could tell as he shared with Urban Meyer, you know, a little bit more of an old school coach, that Urban Meyer was kind of taken by it and like, I love this, you know, this is how it used to be. So I mean, he gave a little idea of what it is. I still think we don't know a lot of the specifics, and it's maybe not for us to know, but at the bottom line is, I know MJ Sherman last year, when he sort of talked vaguely about it, and this is a guy who had been on two national championship teams at Georgia, said that thing makes a man out of you, and you could tell like that pushed him to the limits. And so I was always struck by someone with his background speaking on it the way he did, obviously, because Georgia, I'm sure, gets after it in the off season too. So that told me something.
Yeah,
Oh, I
you
love
always
that.
hear about it. You always hear it referenced as if it's like they've been through hell together, right? Because like even Rhule, I think once or twice has mentioned it in like a pregame or halftime or a postgame speech. You know, like we went through fall ball, we went through mat drills, and it's like, oh, that mat, whatever these mat drills are, sound like it's hell on
Tense.
earth.
Yeah.
So
Tense.
if the over under on how long Jeff could survive a mat drill was
5
12
minutes.
seconds, 12 seconds.
Oh, 12
Brian,
seconds. I
what would you take, the over or the under?
He'd over. Yeah. He'd
I'd give him. I'd give
he'd
him.
run a lap. He'd run a lap or
I'd give him.
two, and
I'd give him a few minutes.
yeah, I'd say
Four
I'd
laps, 7 minute mile too,
dude,
Jeff. I'm taking the under, Jeff. My Brooks tennis shoes.
He hasn't had a Marlboro Light in years. So I give him a little better odds than I would have a
Touche.
few
Yeah,
years ago.
these lungs are working at high capacity now. You know, the visual that sticks out to me though about the mat drills is when they did do the Chasing Three podcast after the Colorado game, and I think it would have went back to that time frame where Rhule was. It was early morning. It started. It was like, you know, 5 a.m. and it was about this time of year. And you think about like the mental toughness you have to like get up and want to do that and see that, like be able to picture like what that experience in the stadium's going to be like against Colorado, and why you're trying to put it down like you are that morning for something that's still 7 months away and seems so distant. I thought that was a great shot of like what it takes like this time of year when we're not paying attention to
Right.
try to get to that
No.
moment where you do perform like that on that stage.
Yeah. Well, Brian, speaking of spring ball a little bit, Do you think we'll be able to learn much from spring ball this year, or do you think it's going to be kind of more super secret lockdown mode with some of the comments recently from Matt Rhule about, players, other teams' coaches finding out about players and realizing they're talented and kind of trying to poach them? Do you think it'll be kind of locked up?
There might be some of that. I don't think they ever go too overboard with I know some people disagree and they think like, oh, it's Kool-Aid season. There's always this overhype from stuff. This is going a little off the path. But I always try to, when I'm writing about like a guy who's doing well in the spring, I'm thinking of it more of like him in his position group of like winning a spot, or being on the two deep within this category. This doesn't mean he's going to go out and dominate against Ohio State or anything like that. And I think sometimes maybe I don't do a good enough job with it and or whatever, but I think that's what the spring is about to me. It's like you do pick up like Vincent Shavers, for instance, last year. The fact that they're like seniors are calling him V9 by his nickname already, and he's been there 2 months. Like it's little stuff like that that I pick up on that I'm like, this guy's earned respect. Like, you know how that goes. You've been on teams where like you don't just get a nickname and stuff like that, or have
Right.
Matt Rhule calling you that. And so there are those little things that are, I think, worthwhile, where you have to pay close attention and you kind of see this guy is climbing without, to your question, maybe the coach going overboard about it, because he obviously he wants to keep a guy hungry, and maybe because of you don't want to have a bunch of headlines about someone anymore,
Yeah.
and that they just got here and they're rocking and rolling. It's probably not to your benefit, especially if you're not going to have a spring game. So I think that's a good question you asked, though, because it we probably are in a different category where coaches do think a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's crazy time.
The stigma of the spring game too. I do want to say this. Matt Rhule came out when he first had that press conference saying that he wasn't completely 100% sure if we're going to do a spring game or not. I did notice right after that, and I think we shared this in our group text, that sure enough, other coaches started taking on that same philosophy or that mentality. You saw USC and Lincoln Riley saying that they probably weren't going to have one. You had Sarkisian down at Texas saying the same thing. So if anything, I think Matt Rhule keeps proving to us how ahead of the curve he is on a lot of these things, which is, I like the spring game. I mean, it's fun, it's good for everybody, but I could see why they don't want to have it anymore. I totally get that. So if they don't have a game per se, is this is my question really. Is it going to be like an event kind of like the Pro Bowl where they just do some activities and some fun type things? Are we doing like a Dr. Pepper football challenge where you got a bucket full of footballs and chucking it through a hole in the wall? Or what are we doing here?
Yeah,
Flag football?
it does sound it sounds a little Pro Bowlish. I know that's the answer he gave this week on a
Oh, he
podcast,
did.
where
Okay.
I think you pr will see like some sev maybe 7-on-7 stuff, some skill set drills. He wants kids to be able, I think, to still come in the stadium, see players, see them without their helmets on, and so I think it's going to be really interactive in that way. I know on the radio the other night, Troy Dannon was speaking about like even a Husker garage sale, which would be. If this happens, we'll see if this gets finalized. But they have all this equipment and stuff for that gets sort of it gets backed up. So maybe that'll be a popular thing, and people can take tours of the Osborne Complex. So I think it's going to be a variety of things like that. I will be interested to see if like what the showing actually is as far as people who turn out, if there's not the premise, even if we know that the spring game was like a mirage, like there was something about the scoreboards on, like
Right.
all that, like that matters. It does. And so I don't know if
Yeah.
it can be duplicated. And so maybe this is a trial run. Maybe we see
Yeah.
like if you can actually pull off sort of a makeshift event, or if it's just one of those things that I don't know, in time you have to just kind of wave your hand and say it's just not a part of it anymore. Like that weekend, volleyball is going to have a big thing. I know it sounds like they're going to play another team in an exhibition, and obviously with the excitement about Danny, that'll be a big draw. I do know some people are bummed out about it, and I've always actually been someone like on the air who has sort of downplayed the spring game and said, they have like two scrimmages that are actually more valuable to the coaches than this one. But now that it's not like there, I'm kind of in that crowd that's a little sad about it. So I'm not gonna pretend, and I do need to get past some of my old school tendencies that are sometimes bring me back to 1996 with a lot of topics.
I
Well,
love how
that's
you brought
one.
up. I love how you brought up just to piggyback off of the garage sale. Like, I understand what you mean, but how awesome would it be if Matt Rhule like tried to just actually use that as a garage sale?
Just like real garage sale.
I need $5 for a toaster
Like
type of thing.
my
I'll give
little
you
pony. He's
250.
got some My Little Ponies and stuff like that. Yeah.
This is a great lamp. This is a great
Yeah.
lamp.
This is a nice used Panini press.
That would be
250.
so fun to see some guy trying to haggle somebody at Nebraska for somebody's old shoulder pads. Oh, you got listed for $10. Would you take
Right.
five for him?
Yeah, I hope there is some Midwest haggling that goes on. And if Matt Rhule like signed the lamp, signed the My Little Pony, that could add like $10 to $15 to it, I would think.
Definitely, definitely.
Yes, indeed.
I think to your point, Brian, we've talked about the same thing on the spring game where it never necessarily moved the needle a ton for any of the three of us, but it's a loss for the fans. Like, it's undoubtedly a loss for the
Yeah.
fans, and it's kind of a sad one more thing that's gone away in service to these broader changes in college football that it kind of remains to be seen
Exactly.
whether or not they're good for college football or they're good for the broader sort of.
I think you nailed it the way you said that. It's the combination of things. It is. It's this uncertainty about is the thing I grew up loving, is it going to be as recognizable to me that I still love it the same, like in a couple years from now. And with that, you see some things that were just sort of, even if you weren't going down there, you knew your neighbor, you saw them getting in ready to go at 10 o'clock on that Saturday to go down there, and it was just nice, you know, like it was there'd be in Lincoln, in my street, there'll be people who are having house parties, and there's no excuse. It's just an excuse really to get together with 25 to 30 friends, but you know that it's a fabric of your life that's been there. And so that's the part. It's not about like, oh, we learned a lot about Mac Markway at tight end or something. I mean, once in a while, it used to kind of be a little like that. Like, I remember when Bobby Newcomb raced around the end and scored from like 88 yards or something, and the state lost their mind about it. And so we had moments like that. But I do think it's that community feel. So we'll see if this works or not. I'm not sure if it will. But I appreciate the effort. I said it this way. I have grace about like what Matt Rhule has to do, how he this job has changed even since the 2 years since he arrived, like sort of how you have to be on guard or have to go down different avenues than he probably even expected. So I have an understanding of that. And I also have an understanding as someone who grew up in this state about like what it means to like bring your 6-year-old down there, and that the scoreboard's on, and you can to a little kid, it feels like a real game, you know? And so both those things can be true at the same time. Well said.
On the sorry, go ahead. Oh, were you saying something, Jeff? No.
No, I said well put. Go ahead,
Oh,
teach.
good. Sorry. Well, on kind of that same note of sort of the rapidly changing nature and losing things that go with that, the home and home series with Tennessee, which was scheduled for, I think, what, 2026, 2027, was very recently canceled. There's a lot of hubbub around that. There seem to be varying reasons floated for why that happened. Just kind of curious the why, the what, the how, whatever it is. Where do you come down on this whole thing?
I take Troy Dannon at his word that the biggest reason is the finances involved and the fact that you could add another home game for that 1 year while you're revamping your stadium. If you think about like 20% of the stadium being out of commission for that year and the amount of money that that's worth through ticket sales, to have another Saturday in Lincoln that kind of makes up for that. Does make a lot of sense in this era where every I don't know, all those dollars matter, and it's big for the community. Like I sometimes people would say like with scheduling back in the day, like, oh, I don't care if they had like six home games and they played this neutral site game. Well, the people in Lincoln care that run businesses and stuff. Like you want at least seven home games. That's like the bare minimum. And when you're trying to make up the money lost from stadium renovations, eight definitely helps. That said, it stinks. Like when you picture, like, I always am fired up when the Husker band plays the other team's fight song, you know, when they turn and they play the song, and you'll hear, like, the year Notre Dame was in town, and you hear the Notre Dame fight song being played in Memorial Stadium. You don't
Cut
like
his
that,
mic
Jeff?
off.
Oh, that's just for
Jeff's
you, Jeff.
like a half Notre Dame fan, Brian. Yeah.
But I mean, it's just cool. Like, you're like, okay, I'm part of, like, this is college football, Nebraska,
Yeah.
Tennessee, Nebraska, Notre Dame. And so when you take those away, it's disappointing. I'm hopeful, although I think this is still, like, I think some of the headlines probably got ahead of the what's actually happening, that at some point the SEC is going to have nine conference games, the Big Ten has their nine, and then it would be awesome to me if they played a game, a crossover, you know, where you had a 10th
Yeah.
game and then you have sort of a two game buildup. But everybody's got to be on the same playing field, and whether
Yeah.
this was the reason or not, Matt Rhule could look at it, and he kind of gave this answer on the Urban Meyer show. I mean, Nebraska and the Big Ten, you're playing nine conference games and you're going for the same thing they're going for in the SEC. They're playing one less. You know, it's harder. You have a harder road than they do until they get that ninth conference game. And I think he also made the point, and it's probably true, whether people like it or not, that the playoff committee sort of proved last year they are making their decision based off conference results mostly. And especially the last month of the season, how you're playing. And so I think that the Huskers looked at it and they're like, we don't get any advantage of this, and this is a way we can recoup money while we're renovating this stadium. So it's a win-win. We'll take the
Yeah.
arrows that come with it. It is worth reminding that Tennessee did initially need the dates changed back to this 26-27. This game was supposed to be played like in 2016. Because they played the game at Bristol. So, you know, I think you just got to add that to the story that they moved it back at one point as well.
Yeah, but
Gotcha.
people don't want to hear facts like that, Brian.
No, of course
No.
not.
And I think that's part of it as fans, that we don't want the perception that like Nebraska's ducking Tennessee. We're too
Right.
scared to play Tennessee. 'Cause that's what happens. And it's not, even though it's not true at all, the money thing makes sense. You know, scheduling somebody like Tennessee when you're playing nine games in a tough, really tough Big Ten, all that makes sense. It's
Yeah, for
just
sure.
that junk that comes with it, and we're scared or whatever. Well, we've kind of just talked about two changes where we're kind of losing things. So I think maybe we talk about on the positive side, it's something where we're gaining things. Nebraska just hired Pat Stewart, longtime NFL guy, to be the new general manager. Sean Patton, who had been in the role, will be transitioning to a different role in the athletic department. With all these jobs in modern day college football, I mean, just a few years ago, we didn't even have general managers in college football. You know, what does this all mean? And this probably isn't the guy to talk to, but who can also this guy, I guess part B of this question, who do we got to talk to make sure we can still get some Val's Pizza and Runza at Memorial Stadium? So two part question.
Yeah, the second part, I can't, I have no help in that. Yeah, is it that'll be interesting, like how people feel about the Val's Runza thing. Have you gotten a lot of feedback? Are people pretty ticked off about it?
Well, Jeff Geoff, our common fan Geoff here, is not a huge fan of either. I'm under the camp that like those are things are uniquely Nebraska and have to be at Memorial Stadium. That's my
Yeah,
take on
I
it.
think what we've heard so far is just people are kind of confused about, does this new vendor, this sort of new
Aramark.
concessions vendor,
Yeah.
what does that mean, and why? Like, we can find a way to keep Vals and Runs of whatever other new stuff they might be doing as well. So I think there's a lot of just confusion and questions right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me just clarify, Brian. I'm not anti Valentino's. I'm not anti Runza. I'm not blindly loyal just because I'm from Nebraska. I'm an independent
Yeah.
thinker. That's all I am. That's
Yeah,
all I am.
you're a contrarian is what it is, Jeff. Yeah, that's just
I used to
you're
work
a
at
liar,
Runza. I
Jeff.
used to work at Runza for a year and a half in high school. So if like I think w one year they had like a contest where they wrapped cheese Runzas like at at mid-court at PBA, and that was like the one time like I wanted to get asked to go down there because I could have ripped it up. I do remember Scott Frost, his first year here for the spring game, in the post game, spoke about that familiar smell of the
Yes.
Runzas, like as he was coming
Cabbage.
down the concourse,
Smells of cabbage.
and how it was like hit him from like his youth when he went to the stadium and as a player and stuff like that. And so there is something to be said for that. Like, so hopefully they can work something out. As far as like Pat Stewart and I on the surface it looks like a good hire. Couldn't give you like five bullet points on him. I just know that the fact that he was like part of the Patriots operation when they were really successful stands out. And also that when you think about those New England teams, obviously there's the Tom Brady factor, but where they really excelled was they would make the most out of guys that weren't necessarily like headliner guys, or they would have a knack for sort of finding players that not everybody was talking about and really seeing how they fit. And so just the fact that he was around that and saw how how to work personnel into a championship team, I think that's an exciting hire. Everybody's doing it now. I mean, Oklahoma, I know, just hired Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl. And it's interesting, Mike Riley was actually a little ahead of the curve on this because he had Billy Devaney come
That's
in.
right. Billy Devaney.
And this was before, at the time, everybody thought that was kind of weird and stuff like that. And now everybody's doing it. So it makes sense. And then Sean Patton, I think, still has an important role. It sounds like with like just the, if you want to call it cap space or whatever, like how you work the money with players. I mean, that's going to be as important as anything too,
Sure.
as you're digging into the portal.
I would guess Patton's more like a compliance guy. How can we sort of maximize revenue sharing and NIL dollars and make sure we do it within the rules, which would make more sense in the athletic department. And Stewart maybe is more of like a personnel, like
Yeah.
evaluating players, that kind of thing. Is that maybe a way to think about it?
That's my read on it initially. We'll have to see, kind of clarify that, but I think you're close with that, and it makes sense that you would have guys filling both avenues for you. And it's a critical time to have, obviously someone who's just looking at personnel, but also like, okay, how do you make the money work? And like at certain position groups, how much do you want to give to this, like, as opposed to over here? And so yeah, I think it's smart. And this is an interesting and sort of difficult time for some of us old school people. And yet, I think when you listen to Rhule, there's this optimism that Nebraska is positioned and can navigate this to get back to the elite. And so we'll see. Maybe 2 or 3 years from now, we're sitting there thinking like, hey, I didn't love every road we took to get here with what college football is, but I'll be dang, Nebraska's like sitting up there again. Like they figured out how to do it better than the rest. And you hear him, in his interviews talk about you can't just live in the past or just be paired with that. You have to be willing to be the front runner again, like Nebraska was during the Osborne era, in so many ways, whether it's strength and conditioning or nutrition or whatever. Like, I think, for instance, I think Nebraska's ahead of people in nutrition again. I think Kristen Coggin is that good, and they're excelling at that, and it's that stuff makes a difference. So you got to find like those six, seven, eight things just like that where you feel like you're in the top five, and then it's hard pressed to think you can't be in the top five on the field at some point if you actually nail those things down.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point there. The Nebraska fans, you will see a change in their tune if we start winning games consistently again. That's just the way it is. Like, people may be diehard loyalists to the old school ways, but things are changing. Everything around us is changing. If that results on the field start to change, people's tunes will start to change about how we got there and what we're doing. So I agree with you 100% on that. Now, we're getting close to the end here, so I'll be brief on this. Matt Rhule, he's got his way he does things. We've all seen it that typically year one, he starts trying to lay the groundwork. Year two, they start figuring things out. By year three, you get this patented Matt Rhule quote unquote leap. And we actually just did an episode about this where we gave our own personal reasons on why we think and we assume that this year three leap will happen. And we gave our reasons as to why it will. And, you know, with common fans, we get some of the basic ones, like, you know, obviously we need Dylan Raiola to, you know, take on a, you know, be that big time quarterback that we need him to be. But for somebody in your shoes that knows the ins and the outs of the program and the players and the roster and the coaching, I would be curious to hear what your ideas are of how this year three leap can happen for Matt.
Yeah. Well, I think first off, I think the fan, like I cover it daily, but I also think I never presume that I know more than like fans about any of that stuff. Like I think
you
this
know more
fan
than me.
No, this fan base is so into stuff. I mean, they let you know when you're wrong or you missed a fact or something like that. And that's one of the great parts about this is everybody's got an opinion and everybody follows it so closely. So I probably don't have anything that's really outside the box or new to offer there. I do think there's certain things with the first couple years of the Rule era where I hope it looks a little better to me. And one of them is like clock management. I go back to like some games where I just there's a thing or two that I felt was off. And I know they study it like nobody's business over there, and they put a lot of time into it. But I think in these games that are decided by 3 or 4 points, there's going to be these moments where you have to really navigate the last 2 minutes really well. That sort of stuff, you know, turnover margin's an obvious one, but like Nebraska looked like they were trending to go plus in that last year, and they still ended up -2. And so I'm still like looking for that breakthrough year where like it just happens and they get to +8, +10, and they're, you know, top 10 or 15 in the country in that. What would that look like for Husker football if they did that? And one thing to attach to that maybe is we'll see if they can pull it off. But I know John Butler and Phil Snow in their interviews since the season ended have talked about being more advanced on with third down defense and some of the stuff they do. And so can Nebraska thrive there and you know, be just a little bit better by a couple percentage points on third down in the red zone, and maybe in those situations get a few more turnovers? That's the difference between 5 or 6 wins and 8 or 9 wins, like right there, like those couple of plays. And so that'll be really interesting to watch. And then special teams, just it needs to not be about breaking even, but breaking it open, like being that type of unit that expects to go win the game. And I don't say this because he's a Nebraska native. Mike Eckler has the best resume for what he's being asked to do recently, like what he did the last 4 years at Tennessee, of any coach that since I've been covering the team that has brought in. That doesn't mean they're going to duplicate it, and that's a high bar. But when you actually go and look at their return numbers and what they did with the kicking game and just everything, it was all really well oiled. And so if Eckler has the right ingredients to make that unit be a plus for Nebraska suddenly, that's a win or two, you know? So all those things combined, but special teams just giving a lift would be so huge for this team.
That's what I mean though. Like your answer there, that clock management was one, I don't think, unless I'm wrong, I don't think any of us had that on our list. So that's why I like to ask those types of questions at UBC, because those are things, you know, average fans don't always think about. So good stuff there.
If Dan Holgorsen could design an offense that scores 50 points a game, then we can worry less about some of the things,
yeah, exactly,
that, you know, like clock management and turnovers.
And he's probably going to do that
outright. Yeah. So we'll probably be fine either way.
Just get him as much sugar-free Red Bull as we need to and just let him draw
exactly
it up.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It's funny, BC, you mentioned you're so spot on. Like we've talked to just on this program, just in the year plus we've been doing this podcast, we've talked to Johnny Rogers, we've talked to Boyd Epley, we talked to Chuck Hagel, and I love every one of our episodes. I wouldn't do anything differently, but like the ones that do the best, like I feel like we could just repeatedly do like schedule predictions, you know, top five guys to watch for in spring ball, you know, go through the two deep, you know, there's about, we could just do about 5 or 6 episodes on rotation. Like, what do we need to do to win 10 games in 2025? And I think people would continue to tune in even if we did those episodes over and over and over. And that's just a statement of like how Husker fans are always. That was one reason I believed this podcast would work, because we talk about we're all football all the time. And we know that Husker fans in February or March or whatever are wanting to talk about who's going to be the backup right tackle or whatever it might be. Like, mm-hmm. Husker fans are always dialed in. Those are always the episodes of ours that do the best.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the ages of everybody is on here, but I really hope that the next gen or the generation that's 25 and under, that they get to experience what it's like around here when it's a 10-1 Nebraska team in November playing for something and you're scoreboard watching. I mean, maybe in this era, it doesn't even have to be 10-1. Maybe it's like you're trying to get to 9-3 and you can get a playoff spot if you win that last week, and you're watching this game over here. And some of my great memories growing up were like, you know, this is before everybody had it on their phones. They would announce like a score of like Penn. Sorry to Matt Rhule for this, but I remember Penn State specifically lost one weekend when Nebraska, like in 1999, had to have it, and the place just went nuts when they announced a score. They of course do the thing where they say Penn State score first, like Penn State 16, Minnesota 17. You know, and the whole place goes nuts, and so. That feeling, I just hope, like, the younger generation that's been told, like, man, it was really awesome. Like, you got to believe me on this. Like, they get a feel that. And I know that Matt Rhule and those guys want the same. Like, it's such a big deal to them for that younger generation to grow up watching Nebraska play in big games. Yeah. And so, yeah, I just hope we can get that going again.
Yeah. And I'm sick of telling my oldest. I'm sick of telling Matthew Jr. You don't understand how good we used to be. I mean, he couldn't even remember. He was too young the last time we went to a bowl game. So this was like, this last December was his first like Husker bowl game watching experience. That's so crazy. I'm with you. Like, but the age even goes up higher than that. Like you mentioned, age 25.
Yeah,
like we're all old enough where we lived through like those amazing glory days, right? And so that I think that's a little bit. Probably why we're still, even after this kind of dead period we've had for the last 10-ish years, I mean, we lived through that. So that's kind of why I think we're still such homers and why we're doing this podcast, because we remember what it was like and we wanted to get it back again. So I appreciate it. And then you're spot on about the announcing the scores thing too. I remember that vividly.
Yeah.
And it was any game where we're in November-ish where we're scoreboard watching and hoping to move up a spot or two in the rankings. That was one of my favorite parts of it, because I just love college football. You know, you'd watch the Husker game and then, oh, let's go see if anyone loses. You know.
Yeah.
And so now
it's so much more fun. Yeah.
It is. It's so much more fun when you know it's meaningful and we're really watching these other games with ramifications instead of just watching it because we just want to watch football.
Exactly.
It's like it's related to what we're trying to do here.
Yep.
Yeah. My boys are 10 and 7, so younger than Matteo's oldest. And as Common Fan listeners know, I married an Oregon girl. I live in Oregon, and so like. But these boys, they watch Husker football. They're dialed in. But sometimes I feel like Rod Tidwell talking to Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
You are hanging on by a very thin thread, my man. And I dig that about you. But like that's sorry, went a little far with that line. But that's how it feels sometimes. So like the bowl game, I think, helped. The bowl game kind of got us some renewed enthusiasm. But you are so spot on. When the Huskers are good, it's every like you can scoreboard watch around the conference and around the country. Yeah. And like, we're part of that big boy conversation. There is absolutely nothing like college football season when Nebraska's good.
And then the whole week leading up to a big game, when that's happening too, is just like, like I got goosebumps thinking about it. You're just driving around Lincoln and you can like almost feel like, oh, in 3 days, so-and-so's coming to town. It's a huge game. Like you can just feel it. Yeah. Can't wait for that. It's going to come back. It's going to come back.
Yeah. I hope so. I mean, you're right though. You like you can walk in a Hy-Vee on like Thursday of a big game week back in the day, and it's there. So, I know that's on their mind, and getting that back, and you know that whether people like the college football playoff system or not, I mean, we're talking about expanding it further. The door's open there. I mean, we don't have to be cast as dreamers for saying that Nebraska could make a run this year and be in that conversation. Like, I know some
I don't know.
people will roll their eyes at that. That's not the way it is. Like, Indiana last year,
Yeah.
if I had gone in here and said that, you'd have said, all right, we got to end this now. You're probably thinking you should end it anyway, but you know, and look at them. So
Yeah.
it's wide open, and I do think Matt Rhule sees opportunity in this weird time frame in college football for Nebraska. Like, I really, when he says that stuff, I think he truly believes like Nebraska's well positioned resources wise to make a go at it.
Yep. Love it. Matt,
Okay.
Jeff, anything else for Mr. BC?
No,
Not
been very
necessarily for
good, Brian.
BC. Matt Rhule, if you're listening, I will give you $50 for your Toro battery operated snowblower at the Nebraska garage sale. That's my top offer, $50.
Brian, you referenced Seinfeld. Jeff is our resident George Costanza.
Yeah,
He's very cheap.
he really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife has told me I need to cut back on the Seinfeld references.
Nope, do
There's going to
not.
be a Seinfeld jar in our house probably, but so.
Listen, they're always welcome on the Common Fan Podcast.
Okay,
You
okay.
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yep. So appreciate it very much, Brian
Yeah, thanks,
Christopherson.
Brian.
Check out 247sports.com. That team over there does a great job. Make sure you subscribe so you can continue to feed the addiction all off season. We'll be back at you soon, Common fans. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.